Bleacher Report's Howard Beck. Howard, how's it going, man?
Hey, guys, what's going on?
Not much. We're just living in Cavs NBA tankathon mode where we're trying to put together the best team possible while also trying to lose games.
What's going on, old friend?
Things are good. Things are good. I'm trying to keep a distance from the tankathon out this way, lest I get trampled by the actual tank.
Well, too bad. I'm going to drag you into this. So, what,
all right.
What do you think about the way that the league has sort of flattened the lottery odds? Do you think it is serving its purpose, or do you think it doesn't matter?
So I put this question to Adam Silver on my podcast in December, and then I decided to put it to him again during his State of the Union in Charlotte, just to see, because at the time in December, he says, well, it's early yet, let's see. I mean, and the reason I brought it up early was, look, early on, there are already a bunch of teams that are on pace for, record lows and wins and below 20 wins each and all this. So we're now a couple months into it, a couple months further in, two-thirds of the way through the season. If four teams are on pace for less than 20 wins, which has not happened in about 20 years, doesn't that indicate that there's still a race to the bottom? And if fans and media are still talking about this as a race for Zion, isn't this still a problem? Because the league was, as much as they were freaked out by what Philly did, they were equally freaked out and just disconcerted by the idea that fans were openly rooting for their teams to lose. They called this corrosive. And they're right, but I don't think it's changed. Now, I had a side conversation with Adam Silver after the fact, and we just kind of just chatted about this. And I think one of the things that I think we agree on is this. With the flattened lottery odds, people aren't used to it yet. We haven't seen the effects of it yet. And it may take, a bunch of teams feeling burned and their fan bases feeling burned by not winning it this season before people start to go, oh, 14%. Yeah, that's not very many percents.
Yeah.
It may take a while before people start to adjust their perceptions and how they then judge what teams are doing. And maybe fans eventually, it may take a few years, will start saying, you know what, don't do that. Don't race to the bottom. Don't think you're positioning yourself for the best player in a given draft class because, one, your odds of getting him are actually really, really low. Your better odds are falling to five. And, two, we're going to see whether it's with Zion or somebody else. Sometimes the number one pick isn't always cracked up to be. And there's plenty of scouts who think Zion may not be either.
Okay, so if a team, and I know the Cavs have jumped from eight, I think, the year of Andrew Wiggins, they jumped from eight to win it. And even the year of Kyrie, I think they jumped from really low back. But if teams from seven, eight, and nine consistently jump up and start winning the lottery, is that good for the league or bad?
There's a time when I would have said that was bad. I'm now come around to good. Because I now think that more variability, volatility is what we need. One, to discourage tanking. Two, let's face it, if you're in the bottom 10 of the league, it's not – I mean, it depends on the year, right? But I'm going to say this. In general, the difference between being the seventh or eighth worst team and the number one worst team might not be that big a difference in terms of your personnel and what you still need in terms of talent. So this idea that we have this reverse order draft, and then we kind of tweak it with the lottery, where you don't necessarily finish exactly in the order that your record would indicate in terms of the reverse order draft, you're somewhere in that range. It is a range, and it's not perfect. The 30th team is not necessarily the team that needs the most help, and on down 29, 28, 27th decreasing. It doesn't really work that way. So if Orlando jumps up or, Dallas jumps up or somebody else, I think it's fine. I'm not sure what the exact best system for the NBA is, but one that makes it a little bit more variable is probably better.
Joined by Bleacher Report's Howard Beck here on 92.3 The Fan. Howard, you mentioned Zion. Should he play again or should he shut it down?
I have a different perspective on this than most of what I've heard. Here's the thing. Every time these players go out, college players go out every single night, they're risking something, right? Like R.J. Barrett could be the next guy to fall funny and mess up his knee. Ja Morant could turn an ankle really badly. Is there any reason more to shut it down after a knee sprain that Zion got than there was before? Like, the risk is the same. And now let's put this aside for a second. when you injure your knee, sometimes you're more, you know, now vulnerable, right? So put that aside. The doctors come out, they say, you know what, he's fully cleared, he's 100%, his knee is just as good as it was before the sprain that everybody saw, that everybody freaked out about. If that's the case, why is he shutting it down? And if the idea is that he should shut it down because his draft position's already locked, well, I guess John Morant and R.J. Barrett and the rest of these guys should all shut it down too, in which case there's no March Madness, or at least it's not really as much fun. I don't care about March Madness, frankly. I don't care about the NCAA. But I do think that this rush to say that guys should just shut it down kind of flies in the face of everything else about the commitment that you've made to these programs. And, you know, I know it sounds logical. Don't risk the money. Don't risk your draft position, everything else. But if he's healthy, there's no more reason that he shouldn't play than there was before he injured the knee, because the risk is there every single night to all these guys.
Howard, how did we get here? Because I brought this up earlier with Jonathan. I remember when Kyrie was at Duke, he had a really significant injury compared to what we're talking about with Zion. And there was no debate. Like, Kyrie worked hard to get back for the ACC tournament to play in March Madness, and it was never even a thought of, you better sit out and hold for your draft stock and preserve your draft stock. That's not that long ago. That's only a few years ago. How did we get here that fast?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, the public consciousness, the hive mind of fans and media. First of all, there's much more of a open discussion that's ongoing because of Twitter, and so ideas that are shared can, or you know, even a position taken like this, where it's, oh, a guy should shut it down, it just spreads faster and gains more traction, and we're all just hyper aware of it, and also, social media is not really a true representation of the world at large. It's a subset. And so maybe we're also exaggerating how many people believe this. And in terms of the discussion, though, and why it's gained traction, I think there's just all, you know, every year that goes by, there's that much more that's clear about how screwed up the NCAA is. And for a lot of people, you know, how exploitive it appears to be, and anything that kind of goes against that, I think gains its own sort of traction or its own favorability. So the idea that, hey, you're being exploited by the NCAA anyway, and your first responsibility should just be to yourself and your career, you know, hey, screw the NCAA. I mean, that's become a more popular stance, and it's an understandable one, and I'm not even disagreeing with it. But I do think that in this case, the idea that somehow there's more risk now and that he's more justified for shutting it down now than he would have been a week ago. I mean, hell, his draft stock was already established, you know, a month ago, 2 months ago, whenever it was. It's interesting.
Joined by Howard Beck here on 92.3 The Fan. Switching over, James Harden said yesterday that Scott Foster is rude and arrogant. Chris Paul then went on to say he doesn't know what else to do. We met with the league with him before, and he just throws his hands up in the air like a shrug emoji and just kind of gives up on the whole scenario. After watching last night, what should the league do, especially in a week where the Tim Donaghy report came back out and a lot of people are back to refreshing themselves with memories of feeling as if officials are against certain players or certain teams?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different things there. You know, the Donaghy thing, you know, look, it's over 10 years ago. We know that the government found that investigators found just him. There was no evidence suggesting that anybody else was involved. I know that, you know, whatever, the call logs with Scott Foster and people would drag that into this, but if anything more had been there, prosecutors and the FBI would have gone after him, and the league would not have wanted to risk having him around. So I think that one is a bit of a red herring, that Foster happens to be involved in a dispute with some players last night with the Rockets. You know, look, that's mostly just garden variety complaining between, you know, or tension between refs and players. That has happened since the dawn of time. Mm-hmm. I do think there's a problem here, though, that the league is going to have to address. One, they're almost certainly going to be fining Chris Paul and James Harden, because you cannot accuse a referee of having it in for you. Anything that sound that smacks of things being personal, which is a word that they use, or anything that suggests that a referee has some sort of agenda at all, is going to get a stiff fine. So they're going to be fined for sure. But I think it's bigger than that. Look, Chris Paul's the president of the players union.
Yep.
And that's something he throws around a bit too, and has been known to invoke it in the midst of games with referees. So the league is going to have to address that as well, because it's a really corrosive thing. You don't want fans and others believing that Scott Foster, for some reasons that have no one has stated, by the way, if it's personal, why? What, like, did like he, you know, beat him in a game of marbles once and then didn't pay up? I mean, I don't know what that means personal, but it you can't suggest that a referee has it in for you, because it will then color every perception every time he refs their games. And Harden even went to the extent of saying that he shouldn't ref their games, and you can't have players and teams picking who refs them either.
Howard, how is this Lakers season going to end? In the playoffs or no?
I still say playoffs. If LeBron's healthy the rest of the way, they'll find a way through. And that game last night, that was a good win for them. Brandon Ingram showed up. They need him to keep doing that. And we've seen LeBron drag worse teams to the finals, right?
Yes, last year.
So, and that was the East, and this is the West. But all he has to do is get them to the eighth seed, and they're chasing a Clippers team that traded its best player at the trade deadline, and a Sacramento Kings team that hasn't been to the playoffs in over a decade and is still very young, and you know, could very well fade. The opportunity is there. They still play the Clippers twice. They play the Kings once. They do have a tough schedule, but I find it hard to believe that LeBron will not make the playoffs.
Are they squeaking in as an eight seed? Or do you think they can get higher? They're really bunched up there at the bottom half of the bracket.
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing here, right? Like, we keep talking about it as if, well, they got to squeak in, and that means they're the eighth seed. Yeah, it's altogether possible that somebody else falls out, too, that the Spurs could also fall out. They could get to seven. And the interesting thing is this. All right, if you're the eighth seed, you're a sacrificial lamb. You're losing to the Warriors no matter who you are,
yep,
including LeBron.
Yep.
But if you're the seventh seed and you're taking on a Denver team that's never been to the playoffs and is you know, like, roster packed with young guys, on that big stage facing LeBron, I'm probably betting on LeBron to knock out the two seed at that stage.
Howard, I've said all year, and everyone thinks I'm crazy, and everyone thinks that this is my LeBron ties going back and showing their face. I don't think any team in the West can beat him in the playoffs other than Golden State. I think he'll beat every one of them. Now, it may be 1-8 Golden State in the first round, but if it's not, I don't think anyone in the West is beating him.
Jason, I don't think that's a crazy stance at all, and I've had this same discussion with GMs and scouts around the league, and I don't think too many people would disagree with you.
Well, they do in Cleveland.
Well, that's a little different. But the fact is, there are a bunch of really good but kind of flawed teams in the West once you get past the Warriors. There's nobody else you can make a really strong, airtight case for. And so, you know, LeBron versus the Thunder, yeah, he might beat them. LeBron versus the Nuggets, as I say, he could beat them. LeBron versus the Rockets, definitely could beat them. I wouldn't predict it. I wouldn't say it's a certainty, but it's all possible. I mean, if they just get in and they don't have to face the Warriors in the first round, there is a chance at least that the Lakers make it to the conference finals. There's a chance.
Howard Beck, we appreciate the time. Everyone go check out his work at Bleacher Report. Always does a great job. One of the best. Thank you so much, Howard.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.